Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, good morning, Jay.
How's it going?
Great, man. Are you angry?
So, well, partly because we're doing this so much later. We're doing this now over our lunch hour.
Who needs food?
My food is to do the will
there you go.
Of my Father.
There you go. I need to have a good follow-up to that.
Listen, yeah, we couldn't... We got distracted with other ministry things this morning, and so now here we are. And so that means this is going to be intense and focused, because we're not only hungry, but we are angry. So we are hangry.
No shenanigans.
You dropped a bomb on Sunday.
Anger
bomb. And I had to talk about all that. I want to know how many people were. I mean, I'm not even joking about this. How many people got, I mean, I don't think anybody would get angry while they're listening to a sermon on anger, but maybe a little incredulous or maybe a little resistant or defiant, like the seeds of anger. So I think that's a little ironic.
Yeah.
Comical.
If only like there were thought bubbles, well, you know, while we're preaching,
right?
You can see, right?
Wouldn't that be the worst though, honestly?
Yeah, it would. But no, I mean, even sitting in it, you know, like, you know, when you and I write and we're thinking about the sermon and okay, God, my prayer is always, Lord, how are you leading me right now? Lead me, keep me from distractions. And this topic, you know, it was on my mind and it's just all over Proverbs. If you just do a word search within Proverbs and any kind of related words too, like rage, and it's all over it. And obviously it's all over the scriptures, but this is one for me, Jay, that I had enough material just from 1 week of work on it for like at least three messages.
Oh, for sure.
And I had to, and Jess was helping me, which was awesome, but I had to really go back through it several times to cut things out. So I'm glad we have a chance just to talk, because there was a lot that you just can't include all of it all at once on a topic like that. But yeah, I had one of the things I cut was a joke about that. Like, you might be angry when you hear about the topic for today. Someone actually came up to me after worship and told me that they knew it was going to be on anger. And it was a fascinating conversation. Like, not because anyone told them, but they woke up with the sense that we've done all these things in Proverbs. I bet today's going to be about anger, which is fascinating to me that God had just tuned someone's heart to that topic to be ready to receive on it.
Well, it's talked about a lot in Proverbs because it's a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you know, we know Proverbs is basically instruction given by a father, you know, to a son. So warning about anger is a big deal, because anger ends up leading to all kinds of brokenness. I mean, it's just, it ends up being, and I think it's so insidious because it can feel so justified. Like, it just feels like you're talking about pride is so intertwined. It comes like my rules. I think that was a really good point where you're talking about how we're rule followers, which I was with everybody else going. I mean, I knew where you were going with that. But I could feel the resistance, which I thought was interesting of, and then when you kind of landed it with like, yeah, I get really angry when people don't follow my rules. And so I actually was going to, let's talk about that for a minute, because I was going to ask you, I could hear the objection, like, that I could imagine that somebody would say, well, what about, but my rules are from God's rules. So like you said, we take our rules and we elevate it to God's rule. And then we defend that, or we like hold, we judge people according to that, which, you know, that's layered, right? Cause we're not supposed to judge people according to that. And, anyway, but then especially when it's just our rules. But what do you do when you, I think a common defense against that is going to say, well, yeah, but it's not my rule. Yeah, I think it's important, but God says it's important too. And it could be about anything from something that is clear sin, that is obvious, overt sin, all the way to things that is more, we, like here, I'll give you an example. So it may seem silly, but being punctual. I can't think of any direct verse right now in scripture that talks about the importance of being on time, But that gets attached. There's some people like that will make them angry. It really is like if someone's not on time, but if you ask them about that, they're going to say, well, because that's a lack of respect. It's a lack of love for that person. You're expressing, you're devaluing that person because you're not respecting their time. And doesn't God want us to respect each other and to, you know, show love to each other? So what would you say to somebody who, you know, because I think most people, when they think about my rule or like the way someone should drive or how far out in front of a turn they should signal or when they should pass or like any of those things, it's rarely going to be just arbitrary, not connected to anything. Like I can't imagine anybody sitting there going, I get really angry when people wear a purple shirt. Like, well, that's just obviously arbitrary and made up. But most of our things that are our rules that we get upset at other people for violating are connected in some way to God's general law. So what do you do with that?
Isn't it interesting? Like even in all those examples, those are all opportunities for us. So like the driving, the punctuality. So we are the ones that are waiting for someone, whether we're behind them in line, we're at the meeting on time and they're not. Those are all opportunities for us to bear the fruit of the Spirit and how we respond to that situation and to trust. But because we aren't like in control and because that's inconveniencing us, that's the problem. So I would say, yes, there is something to be said for if you are just chronically, you say I'm going to be somewhere and you're not there over and over again, or you're just always a half hour late. That is a problem, right? But I don't believe that for any of us, anger is going to be the proper way of actually responding to it. Now, anger could alert you that something's wrong. But again, to move forward, you're going to need to move forward in a very different posture if you want actually a good result. So I would say the first thing to do is to determine like whose standard, like what is the standard I'm upset about? So like the speed limit, you know what I mean? Like actually, I was just walking out in the town of Peshtigo this last week and some dudes were like drag racing. They took both lanes and they were flying. You could respond to that with anger because you could think, man, what if a child walks out? Like, so yeah, like legitimate. But that standard that you're concerned about isn't just that's an actual like safety issue. It's not just, I really don't like when they don't drive 5 miles an hour over, because I like to go at least 5 miles an hour over. You know what I mean? So what is the standard, first of all, that you're upset about? And then two, whose standard is it? That helps us diagnose. Is this about me kind of taking on a godlike tendency, a God who is never satisfied and wanting to control things? Or is this me being actually concerned for the well-being of other people and, you know, so on? Even if it ends up being, you know, my heart is pure in this. I have a motive of I'm concerned about the safety of those kids down the street. That initial reaction in anger can be helpful. But then again, to move forward, we have to move forward with something else. If we will make, I think the kind of, if our anger is directed at achieving some good thing, not just some destructive thing, because otherwise it's just destructive.
I think it's helpful in those situations, one, to realize we are always a mixed bag.
We
talk about that a lot. Because what'll happen is you take a situation like that and say, well, no, I'm upset because this is dangerous to other people. That's probably part of it. But then the question is, well, what's the response? So here's it's not silly. It happens all the time, but it might be a little more obvious. So you see someone driving recklessly, driving too fast. And you see them weaving out, like you see them in your rearview mirror that they're like flying up and they're passing on the right. You know, they're doing all this. And so then you intentionally speed up so that you block them in so they can't get around you. Like, so you're in the left lane, you're moving at a reasonable pace past the people in the right lane, but there's a person that's trying to like, you know, cut ahead. And so then you speed up in order to block them in so that they don't have anywhere to go. That's an example, I think, of it's a mixed bag. Like, yes, you might be, it's legitimate to be frustrated or, you know, a lower form of anger or to essentially declare like that kind of driving is unsafe. But now like to escalate it to where I'm going to retaliate and be justified in it, which is, you know, you mentioned that, which I think is such a great point that, you know, calling someone a fool or seeing them in a way is dehumanizing. And once you've dehumanized someone, anything you do to them is justifiable. It's justified. It's okay. We see this in horrible atrocities throughout human history, that the first step is to dehumanize a group of people or any situation, because once you've dehumanized them, nothing you do seems out of place. You can justify anything. And we definitely do that in anger, that once we have declared that that person is a fool, or they're deserving of some kind of, you know, YouTube is full of like instant karma videos. Like it's justified. Whatever happened to them is justified because they got what they deserved. And so I think that maybe part of it is getting, like, if we look at something and we say, okay, that is frustrating, or that I see, like, I'm angry about that. Again, when we use the term anger, like it's a lot of different levels of that, right? So it might be a low level anger, which we might verbalize as frustration or irritation or something like that, but it's the same emotion, that just how expanded does it get? And so if you see that and then saying, okay, but what's a right response to that? Here, I'll give you an example biblically, and I'm curious what you think about this. I've said, and I hear a lot of people say, well, Jesus, we only see Jesus get angry a few times. But I don't know if that's true. I think what we mean when we say that is we only see him respond in a way that we would label as angry, when he...
like he's turning over the tables.
Turning over the tables.
Yep.
You could maybe stretch that out to when he gives the woes to the Pharisees, you know, and he says some pretty harsh things, but we don't know the tone in which he says it. We don't know. But as far as righteous anger, like I think that would be an interesting study to say, well, of course, Jesus, in a sense, you'd have to say he would be righteously angry at all sin all the time whenever it's, but he doesn't act in a way that we would label as angry, which is a really interesting thing to say. I've never really thought of that in the sense of, man, what percentage of times would somebody actually even see that you were angry? Because what's happening there a very quick dealing of it, like slow to anger, but we see like slow to anger. I'm just not sure. I'm not even sure what I'm like. I'm just thinking, man, I would imagine that anytime Jesus saw sin that was harming anybody, there would be the seeds of righteous anger that would be there, but we don't see him react. We don't see him fly off the handle at situations.
And you like think about the world he was living in too, you know, like it's hard, I think, for us to fully grasp like how just the brutal environment it would have been too. Like, so public executions, right? Done the way he was executed, even it gives you a picture of the kind of world that they were in. And he could have every day walked around in like a state of constant outrage,
right?
Because he could see it, but then he could also, like, he knew people's hearts. He knew what was going on within as well. And that's why even those examples, like turning the tables over, the money changers, they're noteworthy because they seem so different than his typical route. He certainly did not ever get angry in any way that we would ever be able to label that way about anything done to himself.
Correct.
So like even in that moment of the money changers, it's actually like on behalf of people that he is like interacting with, like that they're being prevented from worship. That's what he's concerned about, from the presence of God. So his outrage, if he ever even had a moment of it, which I think you're right to call it into question, because he does not, his default setting is compassion in the face of suffering for the people that are experiencing it. He comes alongside and he suffers with. So like he didn't get mad at Lazarus's death. He was sad. He was sad.
I don't know. I would.
You think he was angry?
Yes. When he called, yeah.
What does he say?
Well, so that Greek word, I was just talking with somebody about this. Like when he cries out, that Greek word is a like kind of an animal guttural cry, like an anguished cry. So I think it's, I think what he's angry at is sin and death. Like the pain that that's being caused. He's not angry at Mary and Martha. But
certainly not.
No. But there is an anger. It's like this war cry kind of thing. Like when he says Lazarus come out, like I'd need to do another Greek study of that word there. But it is like, I think there's an intensity there against evil and against death and sin.
I think the way I read it is anguish and sadness, not what we typically think of as frustrated anger. Anguish at, this is not how this is supposed to be. And look at their sadness, because he's ultimately seeing their sadness. It's not that he didn't know what he was about to do, right? He knew I'm coming in and I'm going to raise this man to new life. So, but I think that, well, look what death and sin has done. And what they experience from him is compassion. And what we do in the face of that kind of thing is we get defensive and we mask ourselves and we protect ourselves with anger because our hearts can't handle it. And this is an area where I didn't get to go into in the sermon, but anger is such a powerful emotion that we experience that it actually prevents us from experiencing the other emotions that we are experiencing, like sadness. Anger can mask it. And what we think is, I'm really angry, but what is actually true is I'm actually really sad, or I'm actually really disappointed. And especially in men, this is so common that when I sit down with men in my office and we start talking about an angry situation, and I start asking questions like, so what were you actually feeling that like before this angry outburst? It's almost always, I was feeling like hurt. I was feeling sadness. I was feeling disappointed. I was feeling embarrassed. And what anger does for us is it's a much more powerful emotion because it goes on the offensive really quickly and ends up masking all of those other emotions. And it blinds us to what we're actually experiencing. And it makes us really unhealthy because we never actually deal with the real thing that's going on in us. We think what we're dealing with is anger because that's where it ends. That's where it takes us. But actually, like, we need to learn how to deal with being sad. We need to learn how to deal with being lonely or misunderstood. And yeah, go ahead.
Which I would say, yeah, I agree with all that. I would say what we're really dealing with then is our finitude.
Totally. We're yes.
And I think that anger comes from the sense of I should be able to make this right. It's a frustration of like, I can't fix this. And so everything you talked about is like, we need to be okay with being sad. Well, part of being sad is realizing like, I can't fix this. I can't just make the thing that's causing me grief go away, or I can't change how I feel about it. And that causes frustration, like a child who can't, you know, like if you've ever seen a baby that can't like get a toy out, like they're trying to pull something out of somewhere, but it doesn't fit. And you know, it's not going to fit through that hole, but they can't. And then they get angry, but it's our finitude. It's our anytime we're faced with our fragile nature, our inability to fix things or to bring justice, which again comes from a godly desire. That's where we are wired to want to see justice served, mm-hmm. to want to see things be restored and fixed and solved, but we're not the ones who can bring it about. And essentially anger is typically our 2-year-old temper tantrum of not being able to fix the thing that seems broken, mm-hmm. whether it's, and then you add into it our own perceptions of what brokenness is and the whole my rule thing. Like you add all that into it and it gets very, very complicated. But even at its purest form, grief over a legitimate thing to be grieved over turns into anger because I can't make it right. And I don't like to be reminded of things that I can't fix.
Yeah. And we sure don't like anything that brings that kind of vulnerable discomfort that into our life. We just don't. We don't want to be uncomfortable. And a lot of those emotions, that, you know, anger ends up being the result of at the end. They do that. They bring us to this place of like, I really hate feeling this. I don't like, and it could be, I just don't know what to do. Like, it doesn't have to be super complex. It can just be very like, I don't know what to do with this. And so I'm angry now because I don't want this feeling. And that's where I think that the difference between like a management approach and a redeeming approach is so like, they're so in contrast, because redeeming helps us go towards something much better with it. And then we can actually experience those emotions as I think God designed them to be experienced. It's not like he didn't build that. Like, that's part of who we are. So the goal isn't that we never have like a moment of that reaction to something bad. It's what do we do with that? And what is that telling us about what is going on? That's what's important.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I would say that I would summarize some of this with is, like, even when I think about a flow chart, not everything that I'm angry about should draw out anger.
So yes.
It's actually sometimes it's about my own rules, my own finitude, my own whatever. And then not everything that is worth anger about is then justified, or let's see, not all my reactions to that anger are justified, even if the anger is justified.
Exactly.
So in the first one, yeah, you talked about Jesus. I you don't ever see Jesus getting angry about him. He was disrespected all the time.
Yes.
All the time. Even if somebody spoke to him politely, they're still not giving him his due as the one who, through whom all things were created, the one who's going to redeem all mankind. Think about the ways he was spoken to. And I think about how many times people get angry because they don't like being disrespected. And that's one thing you can quickly look at. Jesus is never angry about being inconvenienced or disrespected in any way. The thing that draws his anger, even anything that we would claim as anger, is pretty simple in the sense that it is people perverting the way of God to keep people from God. That's the Pharisees, the money changers, anyone who claimed to be of God and perverts that in order to harm people and keep people from God seems to be the thing that draws Jesus' anger. But then even if you get to a place where you say, but what I'm angry about is that, like, even if you're like, I'm angry about that thing, well, that doesn't then justify every response to that. And to your point about the dehumanizing, we get in that place where we're like, well, as long as the thing, I think often we think in terms of, well, is this thing worthy of being angry about? Which already we're going to twist and pervert that, because that's when I was saying about like, well, yeah, it's okay to be angry about the fact that you got my order wrong, because that means you're not handling this with excellence, and we're supposed to do everything, you know, whatever. You have this rabbit trail of connections that somehow get you to a place where you say, so it is justifiable that I'm angry about this. And then we say, and because I'm angry about it, that's the only question I'm asking. So now my, you know, berating of the server or my, you know, angry review on social media or whatever is all justified because my anger is justified. And I think those are different checkpoints. I think one checkpoint is this actually worthy of anger of any kind? Like, would God be angry about that? Like, forget about whether this is even against God's law or not. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's anger involved. But even if, then to be like, but my response to this should be a Christ-like response, and not just automatically use that as a carte blanche to be able to do whatever I want.
Yeah. I mean, so an example that I experienced this last year of what I feel like the way anger is supposed to work. So it was about a year ago. I was at a vigil for the victim of that drowning that happened. And the family was there, and there were a bunch of us. It was a pretty good sized crowd of people that were there really grieving with them for the loss of their son. And the family spoke, and I think the mother spoke, and through tears, you know, about the loss of her son in such a horrific way that seemed so pointless, you know, like, why did this have to happen? And at one point her tone changed to anger. And a mother thinking about her child being taken from this earth like that, from potentially willful harm, right? Anger ought to be what that mother feels. But if then a mob was assembled to go pay back that wrong with more wrong and more evil, that's where anger takes on a form that is so broken. So it ought to alert us that something really wrong happened, and really wrong things do happen. And we need to have that response, but then we need to move with that. Like, it primes us to do something. And the thing that we do then is described all over the Bible. And it's what's all over Proverbs. It's what's all over the New Testament with the fruit of the Spirit. That's the direction that as a follower of Jesus, we move all the time. So anger alerts us. It gets our attention. It primes us for this action. And then we move forward in love. And often, I think one of the reasons we really struggle to move forward in non-angry ways is they feel like you're losing. They feel potentially weak. They feel like they're pointless. And that's part of where we are being reshaped in our hearts to see clearly that the most powerful response in the face of evil is not more evil. It is good. And good will often look like, to everyone else, like the most foolish thing you could possibly do. So we trust Jesus that he is king and that we are his servants. And that's where these powerful emotions, why it's so important that we can talk about it and be honest about it and really work through it, because there are true things that we should feel a level of anger. But you know, there are movements, Jay, that, and there are people that would say in the world that our problem is we're not angry enough. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but a lot of times it happens around political movements. Like, we just need to be more angry. And I really think that that goes against the way of Jesus. I don't believe that just generating more anger results in some good that people have in mind. I think it results in the opposite of that.
I think what you just said there, generating anger, man, what a, that doesn't describe the social climate right now of people saying, well, you should be angrier about this. And so then we try to generate it. We try to stir. Think about how different that is to God, who's like, we're called to stir one another up to good works, love and good works.
Yes.
Which is the opposite of stirring one another up to anger. You know, you mentioned that broken anger is incompatible with the way of Jesus or with the Christian life. I don't know if we ever think about how dangerous that is and how it is not, you know, we've mentioned before about, you know, is it Eugene Peterson or Dallas Willard? Who was it that talked about how a busy pastor?
I think it was Willard. Either one of them could have said it.
Either one of them could have said it, you know, but that a busy pastor should sound to us like an embezzling banker or an adulterous spouse, you know, that it should just feel incompatible. And an angry Christian should be incompatible. Like, it should just, like, that's not, because even if you're going to call on those couple of instances where Jesus seems to give like a sharp rebuke or he overturns the tables or anything, that is not, you made this point, that is not how anyone would describe him. Mm-mm. You would never, no one would have said, oh, that Jesus, he's an angry person. And yet when people are feeling that about our culture, it's like, that's what we want to be defined as, is how angry we are about the culture. And it's like, how do you, it's incompatible. And again, to the point you made, and we've been making this point about, like, imagine the world that Jesus was in. You can't say, well, it's so much worse now than it was then. It's not. It's objectively not. I mean, Jesus is constantly in the presence of people being dehumanized. They're literally in a caste system. People are dehumanized constantly around him. There's no sense in that culture that people are equal with each other at all. And so people are constantly being mistreated and harmed and thought less of and devalued. There's all kinds of atrocities that are happening. We're not facing something new. And I think it's interesting, people will think like, well, if Jesus were here today and if he had to deal with this political party, then he'd like, no, he wouldn't. Rome was not, this was not the perfect place at all. The Roman Empire was, you know, read about it, was not utopia by any stretch. So when Jesus is functioning, he's functioning in that kind of climate. So the question would be, here'd be a question that I would want to ask you in this. So then let's assume that a person is with us of saying, okay, I get it. Like Jesus didn't walk around angry all the time. And my anger, first of all, is not usually very Christ honoring. It's often most of my anger is about how I've been inconvenienced or wronged. And okay, I get it. Jesus, that's never his motivation for anger. So whatever your anger is, like if it's about you, then you're already not in line with Jesus and where he feels anger. So then what do I do? How do I make sense of the world? Like then how do I make sense of the world around me? Like how did Jesus, if I assume like, okay, he's not always walking around angry, even though he's constantly in these situations, What do I do with that to relieve some of it? Because at least for me, I'll see an injustice. And like you said, it's an alarm. Okay, so the alarm goes off. This doesn't sit right with me, or it stirs something in me that I'm like, oh, that's like what I'm actually articulating is that's wrong. That shouldn't have been done. That shouldn't have been said. That person shouldn't have passed. He shouldn't have passed in the no passing zone. People die because people do that. That's reckless. That person shouldn't have spoken to that person in that way. They shouldn't have harmed that person. They shouldn't have spoken to me in that way. Like that was hurtful to me. Or like, what do we do then with that? When that alarm goes off that says, this is wrong. This shouldn't be. How do we keep then from going quickly over into the idea of like, and so I'm faced with my own finitude. Like I want to fix it. So I'm going to speed to cut that person off so that they can't continue. I'm going to stop them, or I'm going to say this thing back to this person because they just hurt me or they hurt this other person. So I'm going to exact justice now by saying this thing. What is the path we should? Cause that's the one path. Does that make sense? Like that. So yeah. That alarm goes off and one path is I'm God and I'm going to fix this. And I'm going to make it right, which is going to be all kinds of brokenness. What's the path that we should take in that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would just say the first thing that for me and for, I think for all of us, we need to get better at our initial reaction in those moments to have a bit more self-doubt or like, we need to be suspicious of our anger. Rather, it's really hard to do that though, because of the nature of anger, because it does blind us. It coming from pride, we do take on a godlike character and God doesn't need to doubt himself, right? So it's hard to do it. But I do think if we just like begin to wonder right away, okay, I'm angry. But I think then starting to ask the question, like, why am I actually angry right now? I mean, usually we often just feel it and we become seemingly impulsive with it instead of slowing down. And I do think that's why slow is mentioned so much around it. It's like you have to take a breath, you know, and everyone's heard that phrase, but really slowing down. And then I think positioning yourself as a creature and not the creator, just like you just said, and then asking him, telling him, I feel this really strongly. I want to honor you in my response. What are my marching orders? Like, what are they? And they're all laid out for us. Here's the challenge though, Jay. If we try to do all that in the moment, we're going to fail. We have to be, and we've been talking about this all along through Proverbs. This is an orientation of our heart and our lives around Jesus and his kingdom that needs to be ahead of time, not just in that moment of now I feel this pressure and I'm responding in a way I don't want to respond. What do I do? So there's a proactive approach of like, today I will follow Jesus when I'm not angry. Or I'm not in the heat of that moment of anger. I will follow him today and I will trust him with all the small things that I can trust him with today. So I'll look for every opportunity, for example, to be thankful, to just see what he's doing, how he's providing, how he's working. And that arc of our life becomes about him. it doesn't mean that in the moment of feeling intense anger because we've just been offended somehow isn't going to happen. But I do think what can happen over time as God reshapes our hearts is that our reaction time is more, we're more quick to catch it. Like, okay, this reaction is so out of proportion to what just happened. And God, thank you that you're with me. So like, I know for myself, Jay, that when I know he's with me in those moments, I react in a very different way than if I'm the only person who exists in the world and this all hinges on me to fix it, right? It just does. But I know I can't just will myself to believe that in that moment. I have to have my life oriented around him so that that just becomes my, like more and more my default setting, that I move through the world that way. And we've talked about this before too. Like if our call is to overcome evil with good, that's our call. We need to expect then that we will have evil that needs to be overcome today with good, rather than being surprised by it and then reacting in a way that we regret later. Because I know often we're just really surprised. Wow, someone cut me off. Well, yep, I God prepared me for that. He told me I'm going to experience that today and I will have opportunity to overcome it with good. So I guess it's just a couple ideas, but I really think it's because anger is so prevalent for every human. It just is. It's in us. The only way to move forward is like a training approach and not just a trying in the moment approach. And we say that a lot, but I think for this one in particular, you can just feel it as a person. Like I can't just decide this isn't going to have this effect on me. It's just really difficult in the moment.
I think that that idea of overcoming evil with good is, so just imagine if we kind of went through the day expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
In this world, you will have trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But fear not, I have overcome the world. Do not be surprised, these fiery trials, when they come upon you as though something strange were happening to you. We're warned constantly, like, hey, this is the brokenness. So there's going to be plenty of things that are worthy of feeling grief or anger or frustration about. So if anger is an alarm, if that feeling is an alarm, then it should pop us, you know, what does alarm do? An alarm alerts you to action, like an alarm that wakes you up in the morning, alerts you to get up and get mm-hmm. moving. Smoke alarm alerts you to take action. Like, is there smoke? Is there like a fire? What do you do? Assess the situation. That's what alarms do. Alarms in are not in and of themselves the thing, which I think is important. So me being angry about something doesn't mean that actually a wrong happened. It just, something went off. So sometimes, like, we just had a smoke alarm went off at 2 a.m. the other night, which is fun. There's no smoke. There's nothing. I don't know if a bug flew in there, you know, like things like that happen. It was a false alarm.
That's exciting. Wow.
Yeah. So sometimes, it wasn't two. No, actually it was at like five, which is, it's 4:30. It felt like that. It felt like in the middle of the night. Which I know now I'm going to have people listening to this going, I get up at 3 every morning. Like that's when my alarm goes off is 2. I get a full work day and it makes me angry that you sleep in long enough. So if that alerts me to the wrongness of the situation, like the first thing is it's alerting me. So first is to slow down and assess the situation.
Yes.
Think about like a smoke alarm going off. You don't immediately call 911 when the smoke alarm goes off. You don't immediately start like hosing down your house. You first assess the situation, because sometimes things hit us and we realize really quickly that's a me problem. Like that triggered me because, you know, when my dad used to say that to me, or my, you know, uncle used to say that or do that, that's what this meant, but that's not what this person meant or whatever. Or I thought I saw something that I interpreted in a certain way, someone speeding on the highway. And then as they go by, you realize like they've got their hazards on, so they may be dealing with a medical emergency. There's lots of things where it alerts you. And so I think the first thing is just assess the situation. But then if it is actually evil that you're angry about, then the action is to overcome evil with good. So if you wake up and there's smoke in your house, the action, you know, is to call 911 and to evacuate, right? Like that, or If you're in a situation like if there's a path that we know we're supposed to follow, or that's the wisest course of action. Well, biblically, when you realize, you assess it, and it's anger about evil, then okay, well, what is the plan of attack against evil? Biblically, it is to bless those, to repay with blessing, to overcome evil with good. It isn't to fight fire with fire. It isn't to fire back a harsh word. It isn't to chastise or shame or judge. It moves more into overcoming it with good. It might be good towards that person who did evil. So somebody wrongs you at a place of business, and you respond with grace and mercy and understanding. Or it could be helping somebody else who is the recipient of that. So imagine this. Imagine you're in a situation where you see somebody get attacked on the street, and they get hit and they fall down and they hit their head and they run and the attacker runs away. Well, which is better, for you to chase down the attacker and give them a pounding or beating, or to stop and help that person who was just hurt? Like, that's I think an image of that. So I'll give you a real example in my life with road rage. So my dad was a trucker. I've known a lot of like he drove a truck for a while. We've also driven big rigs. Anybody who has driven a semi or a big trailer or anything like that knows how frustrating it is when people pass on the right and just zip around and don't have patience and give you space to get over so that you can get over in the right lane. Most of the time, if you're driving on the interstate on 41 or anywhere else, and a semi is in the left lane, they don't want to be there any more than you want them to be there. But people like whip around on the right side. Well, that used to make me super angry, and I'd be mad at those people. But when my response slows down, it becomes less about making sure. So like when I have an unhealthy response, I think that next person that's flying up, I got to make sure they don't pass. They need to wait. And it becomes about like exacting justice or judging. It's a very different posture than when my aim is to help the semi driver. And when I'm doing that, I'm not interested in cutting that person off that's coming up in the right. I'm just interested in like, okay, the next time I have a gap, I'm going to get over in the right lane and I'm going to slow down and create space so that the semi driver can get over in the right lane. That's just a thing in my mind of like the difference between the orientation. I think that orientation is in that moment that the alarm goes off and I assess it and I realize, oh, this is actually evil. This is a wrong. That my bent should be then, okay, well, what's my job now? Then what is my role? My role is to help, to overcome with good. So how can I be a blessing in this situation? It might be to the person who is wronged. It might be to offer grace to the person who wronged others. Whatever the case is, that's my role in that moment. And I'm become more outward focused, looking to help and be a blessing rather than be a judge.
Yeah, exactly. Which is God's job.
Correct.
Isn't that interesting? That's another one of those God-like right. characteristics that in those moments we take on.
And we want to fix and we want to be the judge. That's making it right. We want to make things right, but we are super confident in our own assessment of what right would be. Like how would you make it right? And then our ability to try to make it right. And neither of those are ours.
No, you're right. You know, I had just briefly here two different conversations. One was about anger at yourself, and another was about anger at God that came up. And those are really important topics too. That's where, you know, if only the sermon could be 8 hours long, right?
Right.
No, good thing it's not. But those are really common as well. And the way we deal with them is actually pretty similar to what we've been talking about. I guess that's kind of what I wanted to make sure I mentioned, is that it's similar. It's assessing. So if you're angry at yourself, assess what is the standard right now that I'm using that results in me being angry with myself? What have I violated? Sometimes that's going to be something that we think we did wrong, or like that we attribute to ourselves was wrong that isn't. So sometimes our conscience needs recalibration, because our conscience itself can be really broken. But there are going to be moments. So sometimes I'll say this, our anger at ourselves is totally unjustified, and because we didn't really do anything wrong. Maybe someone did something to us. But there are times where we have done something that is a true wrong. We've violated God's will in some way. And that initial reaction of, I'm angry that I did that, ought to then prime us to do something good, rather than to like beat ourselves up, to set the record straight by harming ourselves in some way. And usually I think most people are doing that in their head, but some people do it physically as well. So it's a similar thing. You have to assess, what standard did I violate? Whose standard is it? Is it mine? Is it someone else's? Is it God's? If you realize it's God's, then that is an opportunity then to wonder, how will God address this? What does he do about mm-hmm. it? Does he just say, don't worry about it? No, he doesn't. He says, come to me, all you who are weary, heavy laden, I will give you rest, which means we come to him in repentance. We come to him asking for forgiveness. He showers us with forgiveness. And then whatever consequences are the result of what we did, he walks with us through it. Whether it's relational fallout, right? Or whether it's a wrecked car, like just all these different examples that it could be because we did something that was actually wrong. We walk with him through it and he walks with us. He stays so close to us. So that's partly how I would say we handle that. You have to really evaluate. And again, it's really hard for us to grasp, for me included, that my conscience doesn't always tell the truth, but our consciences are out of whack. And sometimes they're really out of whack about ourselves and what we've done wrong. And we either really excuse ourselves from things that we really actually shouldn't, or we accuse ourselves of things that it's not actually something we need to own. So I would say we slow down. And then this is where we talk about this all the time, but we're going to keep saying it because it's true. We need each other. We need community to be able to talk with someone else about the thing that we're angry with ourselves over.
Yeah.
So that you can sort through what is the standard that you're using and whose standard is that. And, you know, sometimes we're mad at ourselves because we violated someone else's standard that isn't God's. And that can be a burden that we've carried for a long time. If we've had broken relationships, which we've all had, we can be full of those standards that aren't actually standards that we need to live up to in an objective way, the way we do with God's standards. So I would just encourage you, if that's part of your story, which it is a lot of our stories, we can be really angry with ourselves. You are not the judge of yourself. You are not the redeemer of yourself. You are not the one who can execute justice for yourself. God is. And we go to him in the same way that we would with anger at someone else.
But you said anger. I mean, I thought you talked about how anger and pride, you know, go together, that people who are humble tend to not be, you can't really be humble and angry at the same time. Like it's kind of an important point. And I think as someone who has struggled with anger at myself, the two areas that stand out the most is that are attached to pride is I don't, again, it's that word finitude again, you know, like, I don't like to admit that I'm not in control. So I might get angry at myself for making a mistake that nobody, you know, I remember a couple years ago on a family vacation, I got really angry at myself because our car broke down on the side of the road. Well, I'm not, like, I couldn't know. It wasn't because I'd done anything. It wasn't some maintenance thing that I'd neglected or anything like that. It was a freak thing that happened that there was, you know, there's nothing to be done. But there's something about like being able to accept my finitude and being able to face my brokenness. Mm-hmm. So brokenness would be more my sinful, when I respond in a sinful way and then I'm angry at myself. Like what I'm trying to do is justify myself. I'm trying to make it right. So much of our anger comes back to this idea of a misplaced idea that we are able to make things right. Mm-hmm. Whether if I just did this differently, like, again, not being able to embrace my finitude, where I just am like, I'm fragile, I'm finite, I can't see the future. I couldn't possibly have known that was going to happen. Like, yeah, that didn't work out well. You know, I made that purchase and it fell apart, or we lost that money, or we made the wrong decision here, or whatever. Like, we always want to, we can be angry at ourselves for that. And in that, you just embrace the idea that we are the creature. Like, the cool thing about it is those are actually opportunities for a lot of peace. what the enemy means for anger and a lack of rest, God means for peace and rest, because the reverse is to accept my finitude and say, I am fragile. Like, I am the creature. I'm a child. And I have this Father who is with me, and he's providing for me. This isn't dependent on me. And then with the brokenness, it's receiving God's grace and forgiveness rather than us trying to pay for our own sin. Because that's often what anger is. Any kind of self-harm is like, I'm trying to make it right. And those are moments where we're able to slow down and say, I'm not the one who can make this right. And that changes the scope a lot, and it changes our demeanor. It'll often lower the stress around the situation, which, let's be honest, like, anger feeds on that stress and that urgency. Like, very few people respond in a way that we would say, oh, they responded in a really angry way, in a delayed way. Like, now that's different when people are bottling it up.
Yeah, they're cultivating it.
They're cultivating it, but eventually, at some point, even the person that bottles it up will often say, well, then it explodes. We talk about anger exploding because it's not a thing. It's not a slow cook. It's not a slow, like, if you slow down any response, anytime where you feel like, I have to say this, I have to do this, like, that's a good indicator that you're about to respond in a way that's not Christ-like. So I think that the alarm, the assessing, the plan of action of trying to help other, you know, help be a blessing rather than exact judgment. You talked about, you know, anger at God, which is a whole other.
It is. I would just say briefly on that, yeah. And we got to land the plane, but, yeah. Oftentimes our anger with God is because, and you and I've fleshed this out numerous times before, but we believe that he promised us something that he didn't, or that one of his promises implies something it doesn't. So he's like somehow let us down. That's, I think, often what's at bottom of that. Like, he allowed this thing to happen, or he didn't give me this thing, and I thought that by what I was doing would get that. Like, he promised me that, right? And so then we're angry with him. And so I think examining, again, slowing down, what is it that I'm specifically angry with God about? What do I think he violated? What standard did he violate? And did he actually not fulfill a promise, or am I just dealing with the reality that my life is difficult? My life is broken, and that's true. Like, we experience that. That's difficult. But anger directed at him for that, as if that's like he made it that way and he should have done otherwise. We need to process that with him, but not in a tantrum kind of way. Like, it can be, we don't want to encourage you to lash out at him. He's not the person that we lash out at. He's our holy God who loves us and gave his son for us. But I think we do need to be honest with him. He knows it already. So we talk with him. But again, we slow it down. And I think processing it with someone else is so valuable, because then you can get at what's really underneath it. Mm-hmm. What are you really angry about?
Yeah, so much of it still comes, it just comes back to things aren't right.
I want them to be right. Yes.
And that includes with God of like, well, I did X, Y, Z, so you are supposed to deliver this. And he doesn't. And like you said, and we've mentioned that before, that the number one reason I get from people when they say that they're angry with God is that God didn't deliver something that he never promised. And it's just, we do have to slow down and realize, like, oh, that's actually a me problem. I mean, imagine if you had a friend who was angry at you because you didn't do something that you never promised you would do. You never said you would do. I mean, actually, I think people have had that. It's false expectations. You're like, well, I just thought if I came over and I helped you move, that you would then do these other things. You're like, I never said that I could do that. And people get angry about that. And I think that happens with God. But again, that's why you said we need to process that. Because God is not indifferent to our anger. He's certainly not indifferent to injustice. He's not indifferent to our suffering.
No, he's not.
He's very present in it. And
he's more alert to those things than
right.
we are.
Yes.
And anyone else is. Yeah. He is, again, drawn to that, yep. to heal, to comfort, to be present, to strengthen, to forgive, all of that. And he does. Like, I think that's why it's important that we see Jesus's human responses mm-hmm. to that in the Gospels. So again, a real awesome practice is to be reading and rereading the Gospels and then looking for those clues, those subtle clues that how does he react in the face of things?
Yep.
And what does that say about his heart? And again, I'll say the Gentle and Lowly book is a great mm-hmm. place to start highlighting some of that.
And John 11, we mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
Death of Lazarus, Mary and Martha both accuse Jesus. If you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. They are angry at God. They're angry at Jesus for not keeping them from this suffering. And to see how Jesus responds to them, you know, he grieves with them. He also calls out their unbelief. Like but it's not in a shaming way. It's in a way of like, hey, remember who I am. Like think about who you're talking to. Not in a remember who you're talking to, but like in a, hey, remember, like who are you? Who am I? Like, do you believe you'll see him again? Like, yeah, I believe in the resurrection. And Jesus is like, I am the resurrection. Like, so look at John 11 and see that very real grief from Mary and Martha and how they kind of lash out and what Jesus' response is. And yeah. And talk to other people about, don't be afraid of that. We often don't talk to people because we don't want to see more clearly. Be mindful of that. So many times our anger makes us blind and it hardens us. And even when we know that it's not fully real, we don't want to give it up, because to give it up, again, finitude, brokenness, we have to accept the fact that we're not seeing things correctly. And that is embarrassing. That can feel humiliating, but it's actually a way to peace. It's such a release. It's when Jesus says, come to me all who are weary and heavy laden. He's like, you don't have to do this. Don't carry this burden that is you're not meant to. You come to me and you unload your burdens and you will feel so much lighter. And there is a beautiful peace that comes with someone being able to say, hey, that's not actually your responsibility, or that's not something to be, that's a false alarm for anger. You don't need to be that. Or that is something that is an alarm, but let's let it move us to doing good and not to doing evil. And, you know, like we said, you can't process on your own. So don't hide in that. If you need help in that, let us know. If you need to be connected with other people, you can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or talk to us on a Sunday. We're here for any of those questions or to connect you with other people who are walking this road, trying to follow Jesus in this and the way to life. So we hope that this time has been helpful to you. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. And until next time, grace and peace.